So I guess one of the things that you hear about, you mentioned the differentiation between, for example, EGFR versus ALK. What do you do when you decide that the patient who's got an EGFR activating mutation no longer responsive to targeted therapy? First of all, do you even look at the PD-L1 level in making your decision?
No, I don't.
And you hear people talking about using the IMpower150 combination of atezo, paclitaxel, carbo, and bev.
So the IMpower150 is the great example of how we're all flawed human beings, and you'd be surprised how many people, they want to give the IMpower150 regime, but they don't want to give a taxane. So they give carbo, pem, bev, pembro, and they sort of jerry-rig something. So you go from a somewhat suspect small subgroup analysis that you could pull apart, if you look at the paper, to a completely data-free zone, and we just do it because we don't want to give a taxane.
The issue of whether to use a taxane as part of first-line treatment of metastatic disease for non-squamous also comes up with the IMpower130 trial of carbo, nab-paclitaxel, and atezo, which, like the 150 regimen, is approved first-line by the FDA for patients without EGFR ALK genomic alterations with non-squamous cancer. So potentially, you have the option of either paclitaxel or nab-paclitaxel. But let's get back to the patient with an EGFR activating mutation progressing on osimertinib, no new mutations, and you're moving away from targeted treatment. What are you usually thinking about?
Well, so let's say they were progressing through targeted therapy. What I would tend to do is keep the osimertinib going, and I would add in carboplatin and pemetrexed or carboplatin, pemetrexed, and bevacizumab, and I would keep the TKI going. And I realize I can't stand up in court and say I can defend this action, but you ask me what I do. That's what I do.
And again, even with the EGFR, you're holding off PD-1 for Hail Mary.
Exactly. So I think if I did that and they were progressing, literally, I say, look, your chance of benefit is about your chance of severe side effects. And so it really is like, rolling the dice, and it's not quite kill or cure, but it is in the Hail Mary thing. And, I have to be honest, most of the time it doesn't work and you don't get terrible side effects and they don't respond either. So there's a big middle ground. But I have had people who've had terrible side effects, and I personally have not yet had anyone respond, but I have a number of colleagues who have.
And getting back to this idea of keeping the TKI going, another thing we've been hearing about, I wasn't aware of until fairly recently, is the issue of, I guess, delayed TKI toxicity in patients who are getting immune therapy. What about that?
Yeah, so maybe one of the things you're talking about is, Mrs. Jones walks through the door, you haven't got the molecular testing back, and you're starting her on, carbo, pem, pembro, and then you suddenly find out that they've got an EGFR mutation, and you say, I'm going to stop that, I'm going to stick you on osimertinib, and they start to get problems because their immunotherapy is still in their system. And, one of my colleagues has described that as sort of poisoning the well. And there's certainly a move amongst some of us in the field to say, look, if you don't have that information back, and particularly if the patient is a never smoker and you don't really know or you're suspicious, don't include the immunotherapy in cycle one. Just give them chemo, wait for the results to come back, no driver oncogene, add in the pembro in cycle two.